There's an exhibition opening tomorrow, September 10th, at the Skirball Museum entitled A Blessing to One Another, Pope John Paul II and the Jewish People. With us tonight to talk about it is Jennifer Jensen, curator at the Skirball Museum, and Dr. James Buchanan, who helped put the original exhibition together. Welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Dr. Buchanan, this exhibition was blessed by the Pope in 2004. Tell us about this special beginning.
It began actually with a visiting professor in my center, the Brueggemann Center for Dialogue at Xavier, who told us there was an untold story about the Pope and the Jewish people. And as those conversations unfolded and we began to look into it, we indeed discovered that there was an untold story. And she suggested that we do an exhibition. Now, here you have a rabbi who at that time is working for Hillel. You have a professor, William Magis, who's the chair of theology, and myself, who's director of the Brueggemann Center, who've never built an exhibition, who's never thought about building an exhibition. But we thought, okay, let's try. We went to the president of Xavier, Father Mike Graham. He thought it was a good idea. Together, we approached the Jewish Foundation. Xavier and the Jewish Foundation provided the initial funding. We then went to Rome and had an audience with the Pope in October of 2004. He blessed the exhibit. We promised him at that point that we would open it on May 18th, which would have been his 85th birthday. Now, again, having no idea what we were getting into, we got the rough design from a design firm in New York on January 10th. And between January 10th and May 18th, we managed to build the exhibit. For us, what that meant was working our regular jobs, going back to the Brueggemann Center every evening and working until about 3 a.m. And it really became quite an experience for the three of us. And I always joke that it was an interfaith experience for me because the only night that I ever got off during that whole period was Friday night because of Shabbos. Miraculously, and it really is almost a blur and a miracle that it happened, we opened on May 18th. From there, it went to the John Paul II Center in Washington, D.C. We had no other venue at that point. I managed to convince David Marwell and Ivy Barsky from the Museum of Jewish Heritage in New York to come down and see it. They saw it, loved it. It went to New York, and it has not been off the road for 7.5 years. This will be its 18th venue. It has been seen now by over 850,000 people that we can document. And as you know, a part of what we do with the exhibit is we have people put prayers in our replica of the Kotel or the Western Wall with the guarantee that we will deliver those prayers unread to the Western Wall. And to date, we have delivered over 80,000, and I probably have another 40,000 sitting at the Brueggemann Center to be delivered. So it's been a rather amazing run. It has exceeded anything we ever expected of it. Partially because we didn't have expectations, but also once it began to move into communities, the power and the impact that it's had on interfaith relations all over the country is what has amazed us. And once it leaves Cincinnati, we'll now be going to Europe to begin a European tour.
Backtracking just a second, you met the Pope in the fall of 2004, and he passed away before this exhibition was ready to be opened. How special was that?
It was disturbing, obviously, for us. It clearly added importance and impact to the exhibit because he had passed away. The disappointment was, of course, that there was no possibility of his ever seeing it or even ever seeing videos of it or knowing what we, in fact, had eventually created. But the fact of his passing and the importance that Pope John Paul II had had for the Jewish people all of a sudden became very important within both the Jewish community and in the Catholic community. So the message of the exhibit became exponentially more important because of his passing. And as we move forward, even with Pope Benedict, generationally, one of the things that we know is that Benedict XVI will be the last pope that has direct historical memory or experience of the Holocaust. And the Holocaust was the event that really transformed the relationship between the Catholic Church and the Jewish people at Vatican II. That was the crucial point of that. We don't know if the next pope comes from Africa or if he comes from Latin America, whether this very special and very long and often troubled relationship between the church and the Jewish people, whether this will be a high priority for this next pope or not. So it's vitally important that we build, strengthen that relationship now. This exhibit plays a small but important role, not only in the United States, but now in Europe as well.
Isn't it going to Poland?
It is. They're building a new museum in Warsaw, the Museum for the History of the Polish Jews. It's a magnificent building for people in Cincinnati. It's the size of the Freedom Center, an amazing design. We met with the Minister of Culture, people from the government, and the curator last summer in Warsaw. And we, thinking they didn't know who we were, didn't know about the exhibit, it turns out they already knew quite a lot about the exhibit. The Minister of Culture began that meeting by saying, "We all know we want this as the opening exhibit when this museum opens." Turned to the curator and said, "You all work the details out." They'll have their permanent exhibition, and we will be, at the same time, the first visiting exhibit there. So it's an amazing honor. It's totally appropriate that that would be our first venue. It will then travel throughout Poland, and we're talking to ministers of cultures and museums in Germany, Austria, Italy, France, and have recently began discussions about taking it to Israel as well. And then at the end of its journey, wherever that is, when we were in Poland, we have offered it as a gift to the Polish people for permanent exhibition in Poland once it finishes traveling.
What a significant legacy.
We think so as well.
And it's coming back to Cincinnati.
We are so excited to have it at the Skirball Museum, particularly because of the long history that Hebrew Union College and the museum has had with the city of Cincinnati. The college was founded in 1875, and it's been a collecting institution of Jewish cultural artifacts and art since its very beginnings. And so we're really excited to bring a very, very important exhibit to the museum that highlights not only the rich diversity and the interfaith relationship of the Jewish people and the Catholics in Europe, in Cincinnati, the greater world, but it really will allow us to highlight the interfaith dialogue that is so critical to both the college and the museum.
What will visitors see when they get into the exhibition?
The artifacts in this exhibit are really rather amazing. There are artifacts that represent some unfortunate tragedies in the Holocaust, but there are some really amazing redemptive artifacts as well. We have the cane and the biretta and the zucchetto that the Pope wore during his visit to Israel. So those are really critical and important artifacts that really tell the story visually and tell the story visually about his role and his relationship with the Jewish people. There are also wonderful videos and photographs of his relationship with his very dear Jewish friend from childhood, Jerzy Kluger. We're delighted to be able to bring this back to Cincinnati, its origination and its home.
How long is it going to run?
It runs from September 10th, which is tomorrow, and runs through December 31st. We are hosting tours throughout the run of the exhibit. We hope that as many people in the city of Cincinnati that can have the opportunity will come and visit the exhibit.
And you have some collaborative partners who are helping
you? We do have collaborative partners, along with Xavier, who obviously is our most important partner. We have the Center for Holocaust and Humanity, who is helping us develop educational materials. We are also been working with the Jewish Community Relations Council, the Jewish Federation of Cincinnati, and the Jewish Foundation of Cincinnati, and of course, the Archdiocese of Cincinnati as well.
Has it changed at all since the original?
It has changed in the sense that we've added panels. One of the things that when you ask what will people see, when you go into the exhibit, rather than hanging pictures on a wall and monitors on a wall, we try to really create a world that you walk into. So, for example, one of the first panels we've taken from a hand-tinted postcard from 1920 of the town square of Wadowice, where the Pope grew up. And we've blown that up to 8 feet high and 20 feet across. So it's as if You're standing in the town square. You're listening to 1920s Polish music. And on that panel, we'll have not only our panels where we'll talk about history, we'll have maps, we'll have artifacts mounted, we'll have video monitors. We also have panels where the Pope tells his own story step by step through it. So every step of the way, you're in a world. It's in four chapters. The first chapter is Wadowice, where Karol Wojtyła and Jerzy Kluger, his Jewish friend, grew up. I'll return to that in just a moment. The second chapter is the years during the Holocaust. The third chapter is when he was a young priest in Krakow. And the fourth chapter, his papacy. We always like to say this is a good story well told. And like any good story, it has many layers and many levels, and there's a point to the story. Some of the levels have to do with a young boy from a tiny town in the corner of Poland becoming pope, which is an amazing story in and of itself. The other stories are the tragedies he's lived through and the way that transformed his life and deepened his life spiritually. Another level of the story is that we parallel the story of Karol Wojtyła, the boy who would become pope, and Jerzy Kluger, his Jewish friend in Wadowice, who they grew up together, they were friends, they were separated during the war, they lost touch with each other for over 25 years, and were miraculously reacquainted and came back together at Vatican II in Rome in 1965. And renewed their friendship, which continued throughout both of their lives. They have both passed away now. So you're telling the story of two young boys and their history. You're telling the story of a walk through history, which you really do get with this. And you're telling the story, and we really make this a very important aspect of the exhibit, that what John Paul did as Pope, all of these amazing firsts, the first pope to officially visit a synagogue, the first pope to make an official visit to Israel and to recognize Israel. His first private audience after named pope was with Jerzy Kluger, a Jew. All of these firsts that he did are not things that came to him after he became pope. They were what he learned as a child. And so there's this message there about teach your children well. We all have our others. In Poland, for the Catholics, the Jews were the others, and for the Jews, often the Catholics were. Something went on in Wadowice that was special, that wasn't happening in a lot of the other places. And that's not to say there wasn't anti-Semitism in Wadowice, because there certainly was, and there certainly was in Poland. But somehow, the crucible within which Karol Wojtyła was formed was a very different one than most of the Catholics and most of the Jews grew up in Poland. Those messages and those lessons are the ones that he took into his papacy and literally transformed the face of interfaith relations, not only between Catholics and Jews, and that's the most problematic one for the church, but with all of the religions. I'm one of the founders of an organization called the Parliament of the World's Religions, and we're the biggest organization. We bring 5,000 to 7,000 religious leaders together every 5 years to see how we can work together. I would argue that John Paul has done more for interfaith dialogue and engagement than probably anyone who has ever lived. And so one of the things that I admire so much about him as the global pope is that he walked that path. He walked the talk. He changed the church. He changed those attitudes. And in doing so, he changed the attitudes of billions of people.
I'm wondering, did you get any research help from either of their families, Israel or the Vatican?
We had research help from all over the world. We had teams in Italy, Poland, Israel, all over the United States. With the operation of putting this together, we had tens of thousands of photos to go through, locating first and then interviewing all of his childhood friends that were still alive, interviewing church leaders, doing all of the research to find out about this story, which had not been told anywhere. to find out which parts of it were fact, which parts of it were fiction, because they're bits of each. This is how we spent our evenings until 3 a.m. every day. We were all exhausted, but it was that wonderful exhaustion that you have when you know you're part of something that's much bigger than you are, and that you don't know if it's going to happen. You can't believe at many stages it seemed impossible that we could make the May 18th deadline, and yet it did. And then it seemed impossible that it would go on to be seen around the country, and it has. And now it seems impossible that it's going to go global, and it is. It's its own force, and we were sort of instruments through which it happened. People too often want to give us credit for it, but we were there, and it was our good luck, our good fortune to be the ones to be in the place to do this.
It's never going to return to the United States.
No, it won't. And one of the things that we really want to encourage is we want school groups to come through. One of the unfortunate parts of when we opened in 2005, because we opened in May, we were too late to get the school groups. We have the museum from 9 till 12 every morning set aside for school groups. So anybody who from schools who are out there listening to this, contact any of us at the Brueggemann Center at Skirball. The information is on the Blessing website. Please contact us and let us know, because we would love for the school children of Cincinnati to come through this exhibit and to experience the story and the message and the inspiration that they'll come away from it with.
Where's the Skirball Museum located?
The Skirball Museum is located on the Hebrew Union College campus in Marison Hall. That's at 3101 Clifton Avenue.
And that's closer, right across the street from the University of Cincinnati?
It's right across the street from the University of Cincinnati, so we're hoping we get a lot of their students as well.
And you've got great parking behind the buildings.
Yes, plenty of parking for anyone who wants to come, and space for school buses.
Well, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
I've been speaking with Jennifer Jensen, new curator of the Skirball Museum on the Cincinnati campus of Hebrew Union College, Jewish Institute of Religion, and Dr. James Buchanan, director of the Brueggemann Center at Xavier University. You can find a link to the exhibition, A Blessing to One Another, Pope John Paul II and the Jewish People, at wbxu.org. You'll also find a link to the two-hour special I produced and which originally aired on WBXU May 18th, 2005. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Lee Hay.